is Find Your Dream Job, the podcast that helps you get hired, have the career you want, and make a difference in life. I'm your host, Mac Pritchard. I'm also the founder of MaxList. It's a job board in the Pacific Northwest that helps you find a fulfilling career. One of the ways to get good at job hunting is to talk to people who do it well. That's why once a month, I interview a MaxList reader who found a job they love. Our guest today is Chris Ling. He's a data engineer at Flux. It's an internal mobility platform that helps employees grow while contributing to the work a business needs to get done. Chris Ling is an old hand at working remotely. Earlier this year, he found a position with a San Francisco startup that allowed him to do his job from here in Portland. In a story you can find on the MaxList website, Chris says the job search tactic that worked best for him was connecting with colleagues who served as his advocates. Well, Chris, why do you love your job?
I think what I really found out about this job as I started going through my job search, and which has been confirmed since I've been working there, has been a real focus on advocating for people who are looking for their dream job or looking for the right steps to their dream job. That's completely meaningful to me. I try to be a very values-oriented person in the way that I approach my career, and Flux just kind of checked all the boxes.
What boxes did it check for you, Chris? What made Flux the outstanding choice for you?
Yeah, again, coming from a career development background, both in law and in tech, I really resonate with the fact that people come from a variety of backgrounds, and there's not this sort of monolithic understanding of what a professional is in any given industry context. And when I heard sort of about the mission, the story behind Flux, about how, you know, they're positioning themselves to be within a company an advocate for the people that are already there and already awesome, and to help them sort of navigate that path, whether it's somebody who's firmly has a very strong idea of where they want their career to take them, or if it's somebody who's more of an exploratory mode, they're an advocate for that. And that's sort of the way that I try to approach the relationships in my professional life, is to really understand an individual and to advocate based off of what their needs are and just kind of like who they are as an individual. And I think, you know, like Flux has exemplified that since I've been working there.
Well, let's talk about your job search. What was the biggest challenge you faced when you got started?
Yeah, when I got started, I think part of it is just sort of like, like brushing off the dust and the rust. I was at the point that I was looking for a job, I was pretty well, I was pretty happy with my team and the work that I was doing. But I hadn't been in that sort of like interview mode for a while. So kind of making that psychological step of saying, I'm going to commit to this process was probably the most difficult part for me. And then figuring out, once I started applying to jobs, understanding what the landscape was like in terms of what their expectations were for interviewing a successful candidate versus, when you're on the job and performing. There's usually, I think, a disconnect between how you perform on a day-to-day versus kind of what you can identify or tease out during the interview process.
Was there one thing that was especially helpful for you in getting into that job search mindset?
Yeah, I definitely leaned very heavily on colleagues, both within the industry and in previous industries, for a variety of things. Obviously, to get sort of referrals or insights into companies and their needs and what positions were available, but also kind of as a reinforcement that, I had gone through this, I've gone through these processes in the past where I would interview for a job ramping up in terms of, I do have this long history of professional experience and I can really lean on that. So having them as a gut check as well as being a resource was sort of the major benefit of having people in my corner.
Was that hard to ask for help? For some job seekers, that's a challenge. They worry that perhaps people don't want to help others while looking for work.
By the time that I made this latest job search, it wasn't, but that was a long process to get there. I first moved to Oregon in 2006 to go to law school. And I had no conception really of how to network, how to meet people, how to ask for coffee. For me, I also grew up in Hawaii. And in that, you know, like it's, we build relationships because they're small town relationships and you kind of have that sort of casual small town relationship. But when I lived in, you know, when I started living in Oregon, it was, you know, a very fish out of water. I had not built a network here organically. And so it, for me, the barrier was not thinking in my mind or learning that it wasn't a very mercenary or a very selfish way to interact with other people. And it wasn't an imposition. You have to kind of really get to a point where you're identifying that people are still willing to talk with you, even if it's a professional context, even if it's in a job seeking context. And people know the experience that you've gone through because at some point in their careers, they've gone through it. And I think that was the turning point for me, was realizing that by not reaching out to people, that it was really impacting my ability to build connections in my professional space. And that was impacting me on a longer term scale than just immediately searching for a job. It was just that people didn't know who I was. And people love hearing about people. I think we're, you know, we're social creatures. And so they, even in a professional context, I think people are willing to give the opportunity to just get to know other people.
How did you learn that lesson, Chris?
Well, I graduated from law school and became a lawyer in the recession. And I realized that when I assessed sort of where my resources were and I had none, you know, like I felt really alone. And I started building my network, not because I was just job seeking, but I was trying to find meaning in a point in time where I felt like I didn't have any opportunity to really show who I was as a professional. So I volunteered a lot. And it was in the course of kind of building these organic relationships with other people and, you know, saying like, hey, I'd love the opportunity to kind of just work for free on this task or, you know, like, you know, help out in this initiative that was happening. I started seeing those relationships developing and it didn't, and it was like after I had developed those relationships for a while, it kind of clicked that, oh, these are akin to my personal relationships. They're just kind of directed towards more towards the work that I'm doing or this persona that I had in the workplace. So it wasn't a very intuitive connection that I made, but it was just kind of a process over time that I saw that this benefit happened because suddenly my professional life became much easier to navigate. And I had to start thinking about like why that was the case.
You work in software now, but as you say, you started out as a lawyer. Did you change careers?
Yeah. I think for me, I was kind of going through, you know, I was in my early 30s at the time, and there were kind of a lot of changes going on in my life at the time. I practiced as a lawyer after, you know, like some odd jobs for a few years in the legal field, but not as a full-time lawyer. And I practiced law for a while. And through that process, I started volunteering with diversity inclusion work with increasing the diversity of lawyers here in Oregon. And through participating in that on the nonprofit side, and then eventually working for the state bar for their diversity and inclusion department, I really got interested in working with stakeholders. You know, like just hearing diverse opinions, understanding needs and experiences that weren't my own. And you know, like it really, there was a creative aspect to wanting to develop programming and create these strategies to help, you know, like improve sort of the representation in our professional community here that I just really latched onto. And when I started making this transition, I think I was realizing the limitations that I had just being somebody who was like, you know, communicating on that stakeholder level and developing programs in a very, you know, like a deliberate environment. I just felt like there were other things that I wanted to try to do and wanted to test and implement. And I wasn't getting to the point where I was working on, you know, I developed a thing or created a thing and I could iterate upon it. And so I started thinking about, you know, like what industries do that, you know, like, and then, you know, like I looked at software engineering and my younger brother actually went through a very similar transition from being a lawyer to becoming a software engineer. And he was talking to me about what this transition was like and how you were able to rapidly develop things and iterate things and test things out. And that's kind of the environment that I wanted to be in. I wanted to be able to test the theory or test, you know, like my intuition or my hypotheses about things. And you can, you know, deliver a software product that people can interact with. And you can do it very rapidly and build upon it and see that iterative process. And when I kind of like put all those pieces together and thought, how could I apply this to the work that I was doing? That really excited me. And I really wanted the opportunity to lean into that.
What advice do you have for a listener who is considering changing careers?
Talk to people. Just go on, you know, go on LinkedIn, go on Google, you know, like talk to friends, family members, anywhere that you have any connection to the software industry. Just start talking to people. Ask people to, in this time, a virtual coffee. You know, scratch their brain and ask any sort of question you can. When I made the transition, or when I had started thinking about the transition, I actually had a few colleagues in law that had entered the tech industry, not necessarily as software engineers, but, you know, like working in that space. And I got to meet, you know, I did a deep dive. I asked like, hey, like, what is your life like now? And what are the things that you miss about being a lawyer? Like, what are the things that I need to do to prep me to being in this space? I randomly, around that time, I met a founder of a startup here in Portland. Through PDX Parent. Like, there was a great article about him, about work-life balance and being a parent and running a startup with his wife. And I sent an email to PDX Parent asking if I could connect with the founder. And we, you know, like, we set up a coffee and we just talked. And I just said, you know, like, I talked about how it was really meaningful for me to see somebody who's, you know, like, both doing something that they absolutely love doing, but also not deprioritizing their family commitments. I'm a single father myself, so that was really important. So, like, yeah, meeting people in any context just to kind of validate or investigate a little further is my first step.
When you were getting ready to do your search for the position you have now, one of the things you talk about in your article for the MaxList website is that you brushed up your coding skills. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. I had the benefit at the time of a brother who was at this point, I guess, you know, like obviously several years ahead, but I think it was like 3 to 5 years ahead of me in this journey. So asking him about his experiences in the interview cycle, because I had only gone through, you know, that initial round. This was, Flux is only my second position in this new industry. And just having him say, like, here's the research that I did. Here are the things that maybe you want to start looking at. You know, like, he gave me recommendations for a few books. He talked to me a lot about, not specifically just coding even, but like talking about time management skills when you're in the interview, which really resonated with me as a lawyer, because we're all about time management when we were studying for the bar exam. So, like, understanding that it was not just about what I would consider domain knowledge, like knowing what an algorithm, you know, what these algorithms are, and knowing, you know, things about, you know, the concept of data structures or whatever, but understanding that even if you had that knowledge or if you didn't have that knowledge, being able to take traditional, like, time management skills, organizational skills, communication skills to help ground you was super validating and important for me to understand when I was starting to do my prep.
It's striking as you talk both about the process you went through to before you left your career, and as you prepared for the position you have now, how much time you invested in research and study and the curiosity that must have driven that. Talk more about how research helped you both in your career switch and to get the job you have now.
Yeah. I'm a firm believer that doing things explicitly makes you more committed to doing the thing. I think we tend to speculate and there's a lot of questions. I think I might have heard a previous guest on your podcast talking about just sort of like should I do something, or would I, like these speculative terms. And I think that when we do that, when we aren't putting things to paper, even if it's a purely psychological exercise, that it doesn't feel real and we don't feel committed to the process. And then it feels overwhelming and you get lost in all the possibilities and all the permutations of what could happen or couldn't happen. So for me, like grounding things in research was a way of taking things out of my brain and putting them to paper, or, you know, in this case, like, you know, like a computer file or whatever. And that kinetic, tactile exercise reinforced in my mind that this was a process that I was going through. And even if it was incremental, even if it was like, you know, I looked at one job posting it today and then I wrote some notes down, or I only like studied and did one practice coding problem today, but I did it. You know, that was a step that I had taken, and that was way better than just being wrapped in my brain and just thinking about the possibility of studying or the possibility of looking at this job posting. It made things real. And that was really what motivated me to keep going.
Your job at Flux has always been a remote position. Did you set out, Chris, to find a job that would let you work from home?
I think maybe indirectly, maybe not necessarily from the perspective of wanting to work remotely, but wanting to work with companies that were doing exciting things, but not having, and then I guess maybe like minimizing my ability to leave the state. I've been in Portland now for over 14 years since this August, and I love Portland. Like Portland represents so many things to me in terms of its values and its beauty that, you know, like that I just didn't have growing up. I mean, it was a different kind of beauty. Everybody, I'm from Hawaii originally, so people get a little weirded out by the fact that I say like, I love Portland, and they compare and contrast it with the beaches of Hawaii. But like Portland's meaningful to me because it's different to me, but it's also like something where I'm drawn to. But to answer your question, I was seeking an opportunity that was, you know, that was a challenge, and disproportionately, unfortunately, the companies that are in the tech industry aren't in Portland. And Portland's done an amazing job in attracting tech companies over the last 5 to 10 years. I, in fact, remember, Mac, that you gave a presentation, I think at Vacasa, a year before, or maybe like 4 months before I made the switch to going to a coding bootcamp. And you were talking about how we were on year 3 of a 10-year cycle of just explosive growth in the tech industry. But we still have a lot, and it's grown so much since then. But like I was looking for places. I'm still looking for those opportunities where I wanted to work on amazing things with a lot of data and a lot of interesting problems. And unfortunately, we're not at that critical mass yet, but I feel like we're getting there. So that's kind of what directed my search outwards. And so that meant to stay in Portland, I would have to find a remote job.
We've made a lot of progress, but we're starting from a small base. We're certainly not San Francisco.
Exactly.
Well, when you were hired by Flux, did much of the hiring process happen virtually? Again, this was pre-pandemic.
Yep. Virtually everything except for the last interview was done via phone or via video chat. And it was, you know, like I met with the CTO, I met with a senior engineer and the COO. And then after I'd gone through, I think 3 interviews, they gave me an exercise to work on exploring data. And then I met them in person, the rest of the team in person in San Francisco for the final interview. And then for those who were in New York and in Portland, you know, they called in. And so everybody in the company, so I'm employee 11 or employee 10, sorry, employee 10. And so everybody in the company was in on the interview at the time.
What's your best advice for a listener who's about to start on a virtual hiring process? What worked for you, Chris?
Yeah, definitely find those resources. First of all, like find a mentor, find a resource online. I actually volunteer quite a lot in the tech community. If you find me on LinkedIn, hit me up. You know, I'll talk with you about kind of what the process is like. Definitely to the extent that you have anybody who's willing to sit in on a call, like, you know, like just practice being able to you know, like communicate out loud. It's like sort of like, you know, like the elevator speech, but also like presenting, maybe it's a project or talking about something that you've worked upon, but like do it with somebody else. And that's really hard because we can't meet in person. But I will say the same thing that I talk about when being explicit about the things that you do. Like, you need the opportunity to kind of have the words out, to hear whether or not you sound credible, to refactor and to improve upon kind of how you're presenting information and how you're conveying who you are. And the only way you can really do that is by communicating with people. So like, again, you know, like if you can schedule people to video chat with you or even to audio chat so that you're going through that interview process and feeling it out, it becomes more real, and that will help you out even in this virtual environment. And then on the more practical side, I always recommend that a lot of the tech related interview processes before COVID were centered around, you know, things like, you know, like maybe you're whiteboarding something or writing something on the fly. I would say practice those things or start utilizing tools where you already have those, the ability to sketch something out, a workflow, or draw up a diagram. Have those things in your back pocket and maybe even pre-do some of those things so that you feel comfortable interacting with technology as you're having the interview, because that's a big roadblock is you get frustrated because, you know, like the platform that you're using to write down code suddenly has a delay, and that just kind of builds all these stresses upon stresses. So the more that you practice on those things prior to the interview, that's kind of a big thing in the virtual environment that I would recommend.
Well, finally, Chris, what's your number one job hunting tip?
People. It's always people. I used to be, I think back when I was young and naive, I used to think, oh, you know, like it'll be the work that I did and the grades that I had, you know, like all these things that are on your resume, these like very quote unquote objective deliverables that I think I am now wiser and older. And so I know that that's definitely not the case. But like relationships take a lot of the edge off of the interview process, when relationships will open your eyes to opportunities that you wouldn't have considered, and will be the foot in your door and will be the advocates for you either directly or indirectly. So even before you start, and especially before you start the interview search, build strong relationships with people. Build meaningful relationships with people. They're going to be in your corner. They're going to have your back. But only if you've actually developed a relationship, as opposed to building a relationship solely to get ahead in your next job.
Well, thank you, Chris, for sharing your story. To learn more about Chris Ling's job search, visit maxlist.org/stories. And check out the MaxList website for dozens of other success stories. On second Friday of every month, we add a new interview with a MaxList reader who's found a dream job. Go to maxlist.org/stories. In the meantime, thank you for listening to today's bonus episode of Find Your Dream Job.